This is the eHealth Radio Network, your source for health advice on demand. And now your host, Eric Michaels.
Thanks for joining us once again here on the eHealth Radio Network. This is your host, Eric Michaels. eHealth Radio gives you the most current health information, news, and advice featuring some of the leading innovators in healthcare and wellness who are changing healthcare as we know it. For more eHealth Radio reports, we invite you to visit our main radio channel site at eHealthRadioNetwork.com. Today, we're speaking with Dr. Joseph Leon, a 30-year intensive care physician present at the beginning of three major pandemics of our era, HIV or AIDS, Ebola, and SARS-CoV-2. He presently cares for ill fellow humans with these and other critical illnesses. He is the author of the new book, A People's Guide to End of Life. And Dr. Leon, thanks for joining us here today on eHealth Radio.
Eric, thanks so much. Thank you for asking me to be on.
Well, you're certainly more than welcome and looking forward to hearing from you today, and we do thank you for your time. So, Dr. Leon, can you share with our listeners a little bit about your medical background and what prompted you to write A People's Guide to End of Life?
Okay, sure. Well, I started out kind of as a mutt, as it were. I went to medical school thinking that I was going to be a primary care doctor, a pediatrician, and work that had that went on in while in medical school, and then a little bit of time I spent out of the country working, got me interested and excited about intensive care medicine, critical care medicine, the care of the sickest patients you'll ever see in your life. And one of the things that sticks in my mind about all of this, it really does relate to this question, is a conversation I had about 1972 or three on the quad at UC San Diego, arguing with a kid about our need for a national health system. And that argument, starting 50 years ago, good God, has carried through to this day. The work that I've done primarily in the critical care units, in burn, trauma, and so forth, have led me to see a fair number of patients who were dying, and to start thinking about this question in a more systematic way. There was time that I had that I was actually given to write this book around 2017 through 2019 through a series of events. And one particular case of a gentleman that I knew, a professor at Bucknell University, who was dying, led me to sort of systematically put this in some writing, in some written form, and then turn it into a book after that. But it was essentially a lifetime of seeing people do poorly, not always. In the intensive care unit, something on the order of 80 or 90% of patients, depending on what kind of unit you work in, live. But a good number do die. And it was through those experiences that led me to write the book.
Definitely understandable, and thanks for your efforts in doing so. Now, if a friend or family member are placed in the ICU and intubated and cannot advocate for themselves and they are not expected to survive, what can you do to ensure the proper care is given for your loved one's end of life?
Well, the question starts at the end, the way the question is phrased. The real issue is that we tend in the United States to not talk about death until it's upon us. Now, this is not beating up on our country. I've worked out of the country in Nigeria, in Central America, in other places as well. But this is a peculiarly American phenomenon, I think, to sort of assume in a way that's not really expressed that death is optional. So, to answer the question, you have to go a few steps prior to the question, which is, what do people need to do before they get sick? And before people get sick, because we all will end up sick and we will all end up dying, we need to have thought about what it is that we want, who we want to speak for us if we're not capable of speaking for ourselves, have that person either formally appointed, a healthcare surrogate, or even informally appointed. So that when things go wrong and you're in the intensive care unit and you're doing poorly, there is somebody who can speak with the physicians and nurses about what you would want were you able to stand up and look at yourself in that bed and be offered various therapies. The issue of what to do when you're dying, if you have a surrogate, if you've appointed somebody, is for that person to be available to talk with the nurses and the physicians, if not daily, but every couple of days, so that they can both the healthcare team can fill that person in on what's going on, but also so that the healthcare surrogate, the person speaking for the sick person, can answer questions and give consent if consent needs to be given. It is really a team effort, and without that interaction, it becomes extremely difficult to know precisely what to do for someone who's really quite ill. There's always something, some technique, some technology we can add. The question is that what this sick person would want? And so, for example, if someone's been sick for months or years, and their quality of life, as determined by them, not by us, has been marginal, at least marginal, that they really weren't happy with the way their life was going in terms of their illnesses, and now they get sick, come to the ICU, the best we can do is, if we're lucky, is return them precisely to where they were the day before they got sick, let's say. If that quality was unacceptable, the question is should we do that, or should we make their death humane and with some dignity? And the only way to know that is to have someone who can speak for them. So it really is an issue that needs to be addressed prior to the time the individual, any one of us, gets sick. We've got to have thought about this. And in our country, in our United States, we do seem to have a very difficult time doing this.
Really some interesting feedback. And yes, we do need to be prepared. We never know when that time would come, and it's better to be prepared than not, for sure. Good to mention that as well. Now, you mentioned also in your book, you share some real world examples of cases that went wrong and right. Can you share those? That would be appreciated.
Sure. Share the ones that it's easy to share the ones that went right. It's harder to share the ones that went wrong. And believe me, that some went wrong. And these are cases that I took care of, that I dealt with. One that went just, I think, disastrously wrong from a humane standpoint, was a young woman who presented to the hospital. This is while I was at the University of Florida. And she presented with a neurosurgical problem called an arteriovenous malformation, where blood vessels in a part of the brain are just kind of chaotic and wild, and there's a huge risk for bleeding. The neurosurgeons took her to the operating room, took care of this problem, and then brought her to us in the intensive care unit. And after the problem's taken care of, for the first 24, 48 hours, one has to be very, very careful about blood pressure. Keep the blood pressure low, just low enough so that you don't get intracranial bleeding. And in this particular case, although we did everything by the book, this young woman bled into her head, herniated, and died. She had walked in, and she was now dead. The family was, of course, beside themselves, and there was nothing we could do or say that brought them any comfort. We brought ministers. We did everything we could. And finally, the family said, well, okay, we get what's happened. Can you just leave her here on the... Now, she was brain dead, so she was dead, but she was still on a mechanical ventilator in the ICU. And they said, can you just leave her here in the unit for a little while longer till her grandmother comes? It'll be another 24 hours before she can come. The grandmother lived somewhere, Alabama, I don't remember where. The right answer, even though we were busy, even though there were cases coming out of the OR and we were short of beds, the right answer would have been to say, yes, we can do that. We'll do the best we can. But what I did was say, no, we need the bed. We can't do it. And I took a disastrous situation and made it even worse by not paying careful attention to what the family was asking for. All they were asking for was a little more time. This was my poor handling of a case. The case was never going to go well, but I made it go worse. So that was a case that went poorly. A case that went well, there was a gentleman I took care of, a judge, and he had been quite ill for years and years, and finally said he didn't want to be in the hospital again, ever. If he was going to die, he wanted to die at home. And so through a series of events over a period of time, his family was involved. We got him home. He was He was dying, and he died with everyone at his bedside, his family at his bedside. He had forgiven whom he needed to forgive. He was able to ask for forgiveness for whom he needed to ask forgiveness from. And he died with his, surrounded by his family in a way that was just, I mean, as good as it gets. I just will never forget the very last thing he said to me. This man, he was such a good man. He said, Joe, is there anything left to do? And I said, no, there's really not, except to show your family how a human dies. And he said, I'll do my best. And he did. And it was a case that just went superbly as far as, I mean, the man still died, his family was still sad, but it went as well as it could have possibly gone.
Well, it is very rare to hear of a doctor's account of two of the situations, one that went well, one that went bad, two real life situations. And I do thank you for sharing those with us. That is a big wake-up call for sure. Lastly, what are your final thoughts on and advice for our listeners on the death and dying process in our healthcare system today?
Well, this is a challenge. I mean, the healthcare system in the United States is just seriously problematic. This is an issue I've been thinking about, as I mentioned, since 1973 or 2. I don't even remember anymore. Our longevity rate here in the States has decreased. One only sees things like that with social upheaval, with social collapse, but that's happened. It's due to chronic diseases. It's due to the opioid crisis. Mothers that are giving birth now have a higher risk of death than when my mother gave birth to me decades ago. So we have just huge problems. We're expensive. Our quality's not good. And there are real problems that stem from the way the system is organized. That one hopes, I've hoped for decades, that will be eventually changed. We'll have some kind of rational national health system. In the meantime, though, I think that the thing that patients and families can do, all of us will be patients at some point, is to talk with the people you love about what you would want when you're ill, to have a healthcare surrogate, someone who can speak for you, appointed either formally or informally. And then when, God forbid, the time comes, and it will come, have that person be willing to interact with the healthcare team, the docs and nurses and so forth in the hospital. And it will be difficult. There is no question. Things will not always go smoothly, but it's the only way to make this process as humane as it can possibly be.
Well, we want to thank you for taking a moment to be with us here today. Of course, the topic is one that most avoid, and this certainly is a wake-up call to be prepared. It's better to be prepared than not, for sure. You've given us both scenarios, and we do thank you for your efforts in writing the book, A People's Guide to End of Life. Where can listeners get more information on yourself, as well as the best place to pick up the book?
The book is available through you can ask your bookstore to order it. It's available as an audio book or a e-book or a plain old real book, the way that I like to have it, through Amazon and so forth. And I am on Twitter at Joseph Leon MD on Twitter, and at AJ Leon, two separate Twitter accounts. And there's a blog, Notes from the Southern Heartland, that I intermittently write about health and issues related to health and the politics of health.
And of course, as always, we'll leave links within the show notes of this broadcast to aid the audience as well. Again, Dr. Leon, all the best, and thanks so much for joining us here today on eHealth Radio.
Thank you, Mr. Dyes. Pleasure being with you, and thanks for having me.
And you're certainly more than welcome anytime. We've been speaking with Dr. Joseph Leon, a 30-year intensive care physician. He is the author of the new book, A People's Guide to End of Life. And for all the details, visit ajosephleonmd.com. And again, this has been your host, Eric Michaels, and we do thank you for your continued support of the eHealth Radio Network. Join us again soon for another episode that will help further expand your knowledge on those things that are important to your health and wellness. For more eHealth Radio reports, we invite you to visit our main radio channel site at eHealthRadioNetwork.com. And as always, we do thank you for tuning in.
Thanks for tuning in to the eHealth Radio Network. For more information or to subscribe to this podcast, Visit ehealthradionetwork.com.